This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Shortly after 1:30 in the afternoon, you're listening to TSN 1290. Big thanks to Ken Campbell and before him, Willie Donick. In case you missed either of those interviews, they're available for download on iTunes, and you might as well just subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show via iTunes. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, legendary comedian, you know, actor in movies. You've seen him in There's Something About Mary. Harland Williams, all shows completely sold out. But there's a number of great comedians coming in town right after Harland Williams. Sean Wayans also coming in, completely sold out as well. So be sure to get your tickets nice and early to see anybody you want to see at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Yeah, Harland Williams has been in a lot of movies. Dumb and Dumber comes to mind.
There's Something About Mary.
There's Something About Mary. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go check that one out. We're trying to get tickets for Sean Wayans. I know Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com and me are trying to, you know, we're trying to find some time in our busy schedules to go.
Yeah, where are you going to fit it in between all your napping and your pizza?
It's tough. Well, I mean, the thing, I love the after work nap.
Yeah, you also like the before work nap, the mid work nap,
during work nap.
Yeah, the 10 a.m. nap. I think there's a 2 o'clock nap there too. So yes.
Well, I was going to say,
go on. I'm done making fun of you now.
I was going to say something. You know, Ken Campbell was talking about how open the East is, and I think we'd all agree that the East is very open. There's a lot of teams fighting for playoff position right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Boston and Philadelphia are tied up 1-1 at the end of the second period, or almost the end of the second period. If Philadelphia manages to win this game, they're actually only 2 points behind the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, but the Bruins have 2 games in hand.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, it's unbelievable that the Philly Flyers, they've been playing well as of late, but it's unbelievable that they're still in the playoff conversation. You've got the Ottawa Senators, who are, you know, only 3 points behind the Boston Bruins right now. It's just incredible.
Sure. It's the playoff race is, of course, heating up. And for Winnipeg Jets fans who've been watching the out-of-town scoreboard for the last couple of games since the Jets were last played on Wednesday, it's really been nothing but bad news everywhere you look. For the first time in eons, the Jets are no longer in the first spot in the wild card. They are second in the wild card race, 3 points behind the Minnesota Wild. Minnesota Wild, who are 16-2-1. Since the NHL All-Star break.
What's scary is that the LA Kings, if they win tonight and the Jets lose, the Jets are going to fall out of a playoff spot.
That's
and the
correct.
LA Kings will have that second wild card spot.
And still a game in hand on the Jets.
Yeah.
But, of course, they would... It's certainly... There's no breathing room for the Winnipeg Jets when it comes to the playoff race, and there's no, you know, they can't feel sorry for themselves for a game or 2 games with Dustin Byfuglien out of the lineup and with Brian Little out of the lineup for a couple games. They just don't have the there's no opportunity for woe is me. It's a simple matter of okay, next man up's got to come in and make a difference here because, like you said, Ezzie, if the Jets were to not earn a point tonight in Nashville, LA is at home to Pittsburgh. With a win, LA would leapfrog the Winnipeg Jets into that second wild card spot because the Pacific Division, they wouldn't be third in the Pacific Division as a result. They'd be second in the wild card spot. The Jets would fall out of the playoffs altogether, and the Kings would still have 1 game in hand. And you look at the Jets' schedule, and we've talked about it on air before. You know, you got Nashville tonight. You got to go to St. Louis. You got, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning next Saturday. The Florida Panthers still have designs on making the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. They, of course, have suffered a number of injuries. You know, talk about losing their two goaltenders there in Luongo and Al Montoya in one of the weirdest hockey games you're ever going to see earlier this week when it. You know, it didn't. I think I'm pretty sure you were getting the call next to play goal for the Panthers. You know, the Jets just have no margin of error, and you know, 17 games left. How many points do they have to make? How many points do they need in those 17 games to make the playoffs? Do you think?
Well, I think it's a really good debate to have, and I think there's no precise answer, but I think it's, you know, Rick and I were talking about it on the pre and post game show on Wednesday, and I know they were talking about it on the roundtable. Rick and Remus were talking about it.
There's no way that Rick lets Remus talk on the roundtable.
Well, we let Remus talk. If Remus wants to get on air right now, I have no problem with that.
He's also not listening, so I think we're okay on that front as well. There's no way that Rick lets you talk on the round table. Is there, Remo?
I think I've talked once.
Yeah, that was one time too many, right?
In 3 years.
In 3 years,
and okay. I was never allowed to talk again. Oh, I talked on the year-end special. That was the most recent time.
There was a year? Okay, well, there you go.
Best of the year.
Once every year, he lets you talk. That's probably enough.
Less than that, but yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, Reem, this is a legal curve, so you can talk as much as you want.
No,
with Richie gone.
Not as much as he wants.
Look, I talk on the warm-up almost every day, and that's more than enough.
Yeah,
there's
nobody else in the city who's been demanding to hear more Remus,
No,
absolutely
no. That's
no
not true at all. People come up to me all the time and just ask me, do you know Michael Remus?
Well, that's because you went to singles night at Safeway this past week. And you said your name was Michael Remus.
No, I didn't go.
Can we talk about singles night? Is that a segment?
Well, it's not a whole segment, because that would be a lot.
Is that a rapid-fire question?
It's not, but
should be.
Okay, maybe we'll talk.
See, Reem,
pencil it in for 2:45.
The reason why I didn't go, in addition to it not being very close to where I live, is I was a little.
You haven't been in this because you haven't been in a grocery store in going on 5 years now.
All my meals come from McDonald's.
Yeah, we know that.
But I was nervous to go there because apparently you were supposed to put like a little bag around your shopping cart.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really want people to know what I was buying. Like, I don't want to be judged for, you know, buying fruit roll-ups, for example, or, you know, buying Kraft dinner.
I would say fruit roll-ups are probably the closest thing you've had to a fruit in a long time.
Yeah.
It's not true. I eat apples and oranges regularly.
Okay.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, I thought it was just going to be more so a party, but I didn't realize like you were going to actually be shopping and you were supposed to talk to someone at the, you know, the produce section or whatever.
How did you think you were going to meet people?
Oh, I just thought it was going to be like a bar set up in Safeway. I don't know.
There's no bar. They can't drink.
I had to buy groceries.
Why not? It's a grocery store. They serve alcohol.
No,
they
don't at a grocery store.
They do in Quebec.
You're living in Manitoba.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's get back to the wild card race. We'll talk more about singles night at Safeway later on in the program.
Thank you.
But
Okay, in all seriousness, you were the one that sidetracked this conversation,
right,
by the way.
That's true. It is my fault.
I think that if
you're How many points do they need? They got 17 games to go.
You got 17 games to go, Drew, and you're at 76 points. I think you need 19 points. So I think 95 points gets you in safe. And you could say that 96 or 90s. Let's just, for the benefit of the doubt, let's say it's around 95 points.
Okay,
because I've heard people say you're going to need 97 or 98 points. I think that's high. I'm not saying that they're wrong.
So
but I'm going with 95 points based on last year and the previous year. Last year, I believe it was 93.
It was 91, I thought, last year.
So 91?
It was 91 for the second wild card spot and 98 for the first wild card spot last year.
Okay, so, I mean, it's possible that, like we talked about, 96, 97, 98, that might be for the... So let's go with the second wild card spot. You're probably going to need 95 or 96. How about this?
That's 19 points.
We'll go with 96 points, so that's...
Okay. And even 20 points.
That's 10 wins.
Yeah, it's 10 wins
in
your last 17.
You've got to go 10-7.
Yeah.
Or you've got to go...
9-6-2.
Oh, yeah, or 8-7. Yeah. Right?
20 points.
You got to get 20 points with 17 games left. So you've lost a game to Ottawa here. And really, to me, I realize that the Jets might be keeping track of what other teams are doing, and they are. But the Jets need to win for the rest of the way. They can't lose two games in a row. They clearly can't win three games in a row. But you're gonna have to win 60-65% of your games. So, you know, if you want to break it up in three or four game stretches, then you're gonna have to win. You're gonna have to get points in three of those four games. So you're gonna have to win two of them clean, and you're gonna have to get one of those games to overtime. So after the road trip, when you come back and you've got the Blues and the Capitals, you're gonna have to again win one of those games clean, and then in end of March when you've got the Oilers and Canucks there, which is kind of, I guess, the easier set of games because the Oilers are basically the NHL's whipping boy this year. They're one of the worst teams. You got to hope to get three of four points. That's what you've got to do. You've got to win 10 out of 17 games, and we could sit here all day and argue and pick out what games they have to win. But the reality is it's really impossible because this most recent homestand, who thought that they were going to beat LA cleanly and then lose to Ottawa?
Probably,
I mean, you just didn't think that, right?
You would have thought the Ottawa, especially at the second half of a back-to-back, was an easier matchup than the Los Angeles one.
Right, but you have a hot goalie come in, Drew. You have a team that won five games in a row. I guess they're 5-0-1, but they'd won five of six games. So it's not really a function of who they beat. They just have to make sure that they win enough games to get in. And you got to focus on one game at a time, and not that they don't. And this isn't something that obviously I have to tell the Jets. They know exactly what they need to do. But the good news, as I mentioned a couple segments ago, is that the Winnipeg Jets are playing, I think, their best hockey since before the All-Star break, because mm-hmm. we know they had the five-game losing streak after the All-Star break, but they played really well against Ottawa. The game against LA last weekend, I was in the in my seats for that, watching the game with my sister. It was a great game. The Winnipeg Jets dominated the LA Kings, and I thought they frustrated them, sure. and they made Jonathan Quick look human. So if you're able to play similar to that style on the road, and you know you've gone in 2.5 weeks ago and played the Nashville Predators really well and lost 3-1, you know, you got to get some goals. Hopefully you get some goals from tip-ins and goals off of shin pads. Do whatever you have to do to get some goals past Pekka Rinne. So, again, I think it's going to be hard, but I think this Jets team has proven, with the exception of the losing streak at the beginning of the season and that losing streak against the All-Star break, the Jets really haven't had too many extended losing streaks. They've managed to win 60 to 70% of their games for the most part. So
the problem that the Jets are facing when you look at the schedule is you look at Vancouver and Calgary's schedule, and Vancouver only plays 2, 4, 6 games. Six of their remaining 18 games are against teams currently in the playoffs. And you look at Calgary's schedule, and 2, 4, 6 of their remaining 17 games are against teams in the playoffs. And then you look at the Jets, and versus teams in the playoffs, they got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 of the Jets' remaining 17 games are against teams currently in the playoffs. So the Jets have, if they make it, and it's certainly not when they make it, it's if they make it, they will have earned it, because they play 12 out of their last 17 games against playoff teams right now, whereas Vancouver and Calgary, two of the teams certainly, you know, chasing the Jets for the, you know, or in the chase with the Jets for the final playoff spots, have much easier schedules than the team in Winnipeg does. And the Flames have been, you know, you just can't count them out. They've been so good on this long road trip they're on. And people thought this would be, you know, the factor in the Giordano injury, and then you factor in this long road trip, people thought that would be the end of them. It hasn't been. They continue to chug along. Vancouver, I mean, you look at their schedule. Their schedule's nothing but soft. I mean, they got Toronto, and they got, you know, Arizona, and they got another Arizona, and they got Edmonton. They play 2, 4, like I said, they play 6 games against teams currently in the playoffs. Not a very difficult schedule.
But that goes back to what we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the Jets might have a harder schedule than Vancouver and Calgary and Minnesota, they've got to win their own games, which is obviously Captain Obvious speaking here. But it means that they have to beat some good teams.
Yeah.
And if they're able to beat some good teams here with 17 games to go, that means that they're going to be ready for the playoffs and even more ready for that first round, whether it's against Nashville, whether it's against Anaheim, St. Louis, whoever. To me, that's not so much a detriment. And I think we've seen this throughout the NHL this year. Any team can be beaten on any given night. So, sure, you might have some easy games against the Torontos and the Arizonas, but I wouldn't be surprised if Calgary or Vancouver lost one of those games, because those teams, they might be quote-unquote tanking and one of the worst teams in the league, mm-hmm. but those teams I still think are trying to win hockey games.
The Jets in Nashville tonight, of course. The Kings are at home to Pittsburgh. San Jose still in the running, a little bit behind everybody else. They don't have any games in hand on the Jets. San Jose home to Vancouver tonight, and that's pretty much it in terms of games on the out-of-town
scoreboard.
So again,
those are potential three-point games, right?
Well, you don't care if LA and Pittsburgh is a three-point game.
No, the San Jose Vancouver.
San Jose Vancouver game, you don't want that to be a 3-point game. I don't really know. I think you probably are hoping for San Jose if you're a Jets fan in that game. You know, although I guess it depends on what the Jets do themselves. If the Jets, well, you know what? I think the Jets want, if the Jets take care of their own business, they're right. probably hoping for San Jose, because then the Jets can be get a little bit of room against Vancouver and Dallas, who not really in it, but some people would still say they might be. They're at Tampa Bay tonight in a game that Tyler Seguin may return to the Dallas Stars lineup for their
It's incredible. We didn't think he was coming back for at least another 2 or 3 weeks. So basically,
I still think they're out of it. I don't think.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
If you're a Jets
fan
tonight,
back.
If you're a Jets fan tonight, you're hoping for Pittsburgh and Tampa.
Pretty much. Pittsburgh and Tampa and probably San Jose, but you can probably go either way on that one. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the new members of the Winnipeg Jets and how they've been fitting in since they were acquired by this team. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. There's nothing worse than unwanted surprises, like finding out your favorite player just got traded, or getting internet overage charges. But MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. Want to make you aware of a programming note that's coming up here on the station. As you may or may not be aware, Hustler and Lawless are on the road with the Jets as they head on this entire road trip, starting in Nashville tonight. Then, of course, St. Louis on Tuesday. Miami on Thursday, and then Tampa Bay on Saturday. On Monday, H&L will feature their Coaches Summit with Paul Maurice, where they will sit down with Coach Maurice for a frank and open conversation about the season, the Jets season so far, and the run to the playoffs. So be sure to check that out on Monday here on TSN 1290. And as well, it's going to be replayed both on Wednesday, I believe, and throughout the course of the week. Replayed on Monday and Wednesday as well, in case you missed the original airing of it. It's the 2015 Coaches Summit, brought to you by Mr. Lube, exclusive to TSN 1290.
Yeah, I always look forward to listening to those. I listened to the one last year that they did, and recommend everybody tuning in for that. I want to you know, quickly, before we get into some of the new players that the Jets have acquired here, Drew, I want to, you know, mention a little story here that I got involving Michael Remus, which was, I thought, you know, was worth mentioning, and I thought was really a nice thing of Michael Remus to do. So, as you know, Drew, a bunch of our friends have had a hockey team, a recreational beer league hockey team, mm-hmm. for, I don't know, 10 years now.
Sure, it's been a long time.
And Michael's been on that team almost every year. And yeah. So this morning, before...
The team is much like the Jets 1.0, and they haven't had much playoff success.
That's not true, actually. I've been on the team a couple years. We won the championship.
Really? We won. Yeah, we won last year.
I apologize. I was unaware of that.
They brought me in a couple years ago to solidify the veteran leadership of the team.
And everything went to hell at that point in time.
Yeah, no, but...
You guys won last year?
We've won summer before, but last year we won the fall-winter in our division. Yeah. Granted, we're not playing in the A division here, but we're playing some hockey. It's still a stick and puck.
Yeah, that's right. And Remus is actually usually one of the top players. I want to get to the story here.
Because you're going to tell a nice story about Remus, I have to throw him under the bus.
Right.
Best wrist shot I've ever seen is when he scored on his own goalie.
Okay,
that a few times, so don't worry.
Remus is a good stay-at-home defenseman who can sometimes rush that puck up.
And, yeah.
Okay, so... I own a house with my buddy Hart.
Yeah.
So I'm leaving to do the radio show this morning.
Oh, that's good.
We met before the radio show, Drew, and
we did.
My friend Hart tells me a little story about Remus. In addition to saying we should give Remus more airtime, he says,
"Well, that's crazy.
Well, last night my." So I'll give some background story here.
Can you make this the long version?
This is the longest story ever.
This is the short version.
I know that I'm a great person and all, but you're really dragging it out.
This is a good one.
There's people listening that are falling asleep.
Hey, Reem, I'm trying to help you out because your image was really tarnished after that Sour Soother incident when you wouldn't share your Sour Soothers with Richie during the midweek show. Anyways, Hart had two hockey games last night. He plays on two teams.
Sure.
So for the second game, he had to buy beer. But he couldn't keep the beer in his car because he wouldn't have time to go outside.
This isn't that great a story.
To go outside and get the beer. Sorry, he couldn't keep the beer in the...
Yeah, I get it. He had to get beer.
He had to keep the beer in his car while he transitioned
and then
from...
I went to his car and got the beer.
While transitioned from game to...
That's the story?
The story, that I went and got the beer.
I thought it was really nice of you because other friend Neil Rockman wouldn't go out and get the beer.
Yeah, but Neil's
so Remus dirt. Voluntarily went out, got the beer.
It's not like it was
which
minus
was, 40. Was unable to be picked up by our friend Hart.
You wasted
and,
so
it was,
much
I thought
time.
It was a really nice thing that Remus did.
You wasted 5 minutes of airtime on that story.
Well, you cut the story off. You ruined the story.
It was terrible. I knew how it ended. I went and got the beer.
beer.
Obviously, you knew how it ended. Anyone, it was involving you.
Anyone who liked beer would have gone and done that.
Neil didn't go get it.
Neil's a jerk.
Yeah, Neil's a jerk and doesn't like
That's
beer.
That's what I'm saying. It was a nice thing of Remus
Neil
to
doesn't
do.
Like, Neil doesn't like carbs, so why would he go get beer?
Well, because he was going to be having one of those
beers. I just went outside and walked 30
okay,
seconds.
Okay, Reem, you know, I'm trying to make to you get, look good. If you don't beer. Appreciate it, then that's fine.
I thought you were going
to
talk about how I went on the river trail yesterday. It was great.
You went on a skate on the river trail? Got to do it before the weather is probably turning into
no
mush.
No one cares about that.
I didn't care about that. I'm telling people, if you're outside, go on the river trail. It was awesome.
Did you go with Leah? Or did you?
Yeah, we went skated from her place to the Forks, down St. Vitale. Yeah. Great skate.
That's a great skate.
Loved it. I go again.
Both of those stories, by the way, were terrible, terrible stories.
Awful. Well, I had to try to save it here.
I apologize to anybody who had to listen to that.
I just wasted like 6 minutes.
Yeah. Let's talk about the
last time I tried to tell a nice story about Michael.
It was a terrible story.
It was if you're going to actually tell like a real nice story, like I did something for charity or something.
Yeah, but you haven't done anything for charity.
I was in the Mike Keane Classic Tournament last year. I just donated some money to a few foundations.
The Michael Remus Foundation.
Yeah, the Human Fund there,
no,
Remo.
I donated to Crohn's and Colitis. Come on.
Okay, that's good. Let's talk about the Jets' new acquisitions since the trade deadline. We've seen them for a number of games now. Jiří Tlusty, Lee Stempniak.
Yep.
Prior to that, of course, Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford joining the roster in the Evander Kane trade. You know, we've only really seen Stempniak for that one game on Wednesday against the Senators, and he got that assist, the secondary assist on the Michael Frolik goal, and it sort of comes as advertised, I would say, in that he looked like he's an NHL player. He's not flashy. He's not especially exciting. He's not going to be a difference maker in your lineup, but he's a depth player who, you know, will you know, knows his role and plays it to a decent level.
Right. I really like the acquisition the Jets have made. I like the acquisition of Lee Stempniak, and you don't have to give up another draft pick. You give up Carl Klingberg, who wasn't really factoring in to your long-term plans. And you're right, Drew, especially when a player like Brian Little goes down and you have some depth issues and forwards have to be moved up. So Lee Stempniak and Jiří Tlusty, who was playing on the second line, are now going to play with Jim Slater on that third line. But yeah, Lee Stempniak's game is not flashy, but he's a guy that's proven again and again that he can score at the NHL level. He's done it throughout his career with Toronto and Calgary, and he had 9 goals with the New York Rangers there. The guy to me that continues to be the most impressive, and I know it's been 4 weeks now, mm-hmm. which is pretty crazy, is Tyler Myers. I thought Tim Campbell wrote a great article about Tyler Myers a couple days ago. It was actually Ed Tate. Hopefully Ed's not listening and he's not going to get mad at me. It was Ed Tate that wrote the article about Tyler Myers, how he's adapted really quickly. You know, he's got 7 points in 8 games for the Jets. He's playing 23, 24 minutes a game with Tobias Enstrom. He scored that beautiful goal against the Los Angeles Kings last weekend. But to me, he's been the standout, and it's not just because he's 6'8". He's really, really fit into this team so well, and he's become... You could almost argue maybe he's not as talented as Jacob Trouba, but he's taking on that number one defenseman role really nice, the shutdown role, in addition to contributing offensively. But so when you throw in Drew Stafford and how he's played with Mark Scheifele, they've really found some chemistry. Jiří Tlusty, you know, he had a tough game against Ottawa. Oh, he wasn't able to bury that goal.
He's seeing that empty net in his nightmares for the next few weeks until he scores a goal.
But he still looked good to me playing with Mark Scheifele on that second line. And now, as we mentioned before, he's going to move down to the third line. But these guys are providing depth and really something the Jets haven't seen a lot in previous years. So
we talked about it earlier. When you look at the injuries the Jets have suffered right now, you know, no Little tonight, Matthew Perreault still out of the lineup. And you look at their roster, if this had been last year, their roster would be decimated and it would be a quasi-AHL lineup. Now, you can still say it's clearly an NHL lineup. They have NHL talent filling in or maybe moving up in the lineup, but it's not, you know, this isn't the, you know, the days of yore where one injury and the team is completely out of the, you know, out of contention.
Well, I think it's a good point that you mentioned, you know, aside from Eric Odell, who played significant games for the Jets last year, not so much this year, but aside from Eric Odell, you don't have any AHL call-ups in the lineup, and that goes for forward, defense, or goaltender. Obviously, Michael Hutchinson, this is his first full-time year, but
he's,
the point
he's proven
being,
he's an NHL goaltender.
Right, the point being that they now have proven NHL veteran players in their lineup now on the third and fourth line, and I think Chris Thorburn, you know, moving down to the fourth line, that allows him... to really be more effective. Not that he hasn't been good on the third line, but you have Lee Stempniak and Jiří Tlusti there, players with more offensive ability.
I actually, sorry, Ezzy, for interrupting. I mean, when you look at the Jets' lines for tonight's game in Nashville, and again, we'll go through them because, you know, they're different. Ladd, Lowry, Frolik, Stafford, Scheifele, Wheeler, Tlusti, Slater, Stempniak, Thorburn, Odell, Peluso. Personally, I wouldn't have mind seeing Odell in that third line spot instead of Slater. Keep Thorburn, Slater, and Peluso together and put Odell up there, because I think Odell's got a bit of a, he's got more offensive upside than Slater does. Now, it's not a high upside, but I wouldn't mind seeing Odell in that third line center slot as opposed to Slater. I would have kept Slater in the fourth line, as he's been familiar with it all year long.
Yeah, and I can see why Maurice is putting Slater in the third line role. And, you know, you mentioned the upside. Odell is still relatively young, but he hasn't played a lot in the NHL this year. And I can see why, when you're putting him in the third line role, Slater is very good faceoffs. He's one of the top faceoff guys in the NHL. And you know that with a veteran guy like Slater in the NHL, that's probably more so why they put him in the third line. And you make a good point, Drew. Eric Odell, when he's played for the Winnipeg Jets this year, hasn't played a lot. And I would imagine that the fourth line will play a little bit more than in previous years. But you're in a situation where Paul Maurice now has really had to put the lines in kind of a Rolodex, and he's really had to figure out what he's going to go with. And I wouldn't be surprised if those lines are changed in the next game versus St. Louis. But, you know, the opportunity for Eric Odell is there. Whether he's playing on the fourth line or third line, he's going to get an opportunity now to not only prove himself this year, but prove himself going ahead next year, because we'd assume that next year he's still going to be part of the Jets organization. So it's going to be a big test for the Jets here. They're going to have to find ways to create offense against a team that doesn't give you much. Nashville is one of the top defensive teams in the league. Shea Weber is going to be out there for 25 minutes a game with Roman Josi. Pekka Rinne is on his way to either winning the Vezina or being a Vezina finalist, so it's a tough test for the Jets.
Yeah, you mentioned faceoffs. Brian Little taking the third most faceoffs in the entire NHL this season, so that's certainly going to be a loss out of the lineup, in addition to the goals and the assists and you know, his role as the number one center on this team. The Jets lose a guy who's taking the third most faceoffs in the entire NHL, so you're going to see Jim Slater taking more draws, of course, today, along with Scheifele and Lowry. Let's head to break. When we come back, Bruce Lupke, the voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside analyst Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is here as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the radio voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Bruce Lupke. Bruce, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem, guys. If there's a little bit of background noise, I apologize. I'm standing at the mall in Brandon helping out with Youth for Sport registration today. So,
well, you appreciate you giving us your time. Multitasking.
No problem. If anybody wants to umpire softball, tell them to come down and see me.
Okay. If anybody wants to go to umpire softball, head to Brandon and talk to Bruce there at the mall, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Alrighty. Bruce, brought you on to talk about the Wheat Kings. Just a terrific year for the team from Brandon, the Manitoba's lone representative in the Western Hockey League. They clinched the Eastern Conference title this past weekend, and with 101 points are tied with the Kelowna Rockets for first overall in the entire WHL. How does this Wheat King team compare with some of the other great Wheat Kings teams of years past?
Well, I threw this out earlier this week. Some people find it a little tough to fathom, but this is the Wheat Kings' 48th season in the Western Hockey League, and this year's team has a chance to be just the 15th to reach 50 wins in a single season. So that's some pretty elite company. And when you talk about some of those iconic teams of the past for the Wheat Kings, you go back to the 78-79 team that featured Brian Propp, Brad McCrimmon, Ray Allison, some greats that went on to play in the National Hockey League. That would probably be the benchmark for any team. In fact, the record holder in the CHL with 125 points that year and a 58-5-9 record. This team, I think, is probably a little bit comparable in recent memory in some ways to the Memorial Cup host team in 2009-2010, where they have a lot of depth and talent, a lot of scoring depth, and obviously some pretty talented guys that are going to find their way into the pro ranks and the National Hockey League. The one difference I would say for this year's team for the Wheat Kings as compared to that 09-10 team is that it's a bit of a younger team. Some of their better players are guys that are going to be back for another season or two, perhaps, with this hockey club, as opposed to that year's team, which obviously was put together to be the Memorial Cup host in 2010 when it was held here in Brandon. But it's a pretty strong team, and I think one of the keys to their success has been that they have a lot of depth, probably more depth than a lot of teams in the Western Hockey League.
Bruce, on Craig Button's most recent Craigslist, he had Wheat Kings defenseman Ivan Provorov ranked 8th overall, and he's really climbed up the rankings. He's got 14 goals and 55 points in 52 games this year. How would you describe Provorov to our listeners, guys, for people who haven't seen him play?
Well, he's a very smooth skating defenseman, handles the puck really well and really makes good passes, particularly coming out of his own end. And you know, I think, Craig, last time I saw him, maybe described him even as possibly the best defenseman available in the NHL draft this year, which is saying a lot. And some scouts have told me as we traveled around during the course of the season that if he was just a little bit bigger, he would certainly for sure be a top five pick this year. He's 6 feet and about 190, 195 pounds right now, and probably he's not going to get a lot taller. But he does everything well. He can, help you out on both special teams, power play and penalty kill, excellent 5-on-5, skates really well, makes good first passes. Everything you'd want from a defenseman right now in the pro ranks, I think he brings to the table. And I think whatever team ends up selecting him, probably top 10, I would suggest at this point. He certainly hasn't done anything to hurt himself, and I think he can only help himself moving forward as we go into the playoffs here in the spring to help himself as far as his draft status is concerned.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Bruce Lupke. He's the radio voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings. And Bruce, we're obviously we'll talk about more players individually throughout the course of the interview. I just wanted to talk about the playoff race as it gets even closer to occurring in the Western Conference. Wheat Kings, like we said, number one in the Eastern Division. Right now, they would be matched up against the Edmonton Oil Kings if the playoffs were to start today. Do you think the Wheat Kings have a preference who they play in the first round, or are they, given the commanding lead in terms of points, they're happy to take on whomever they would get when the playoffs begin?
I don't think there's a preference for them. I think there is an idea of who they might match up better against, but you'd never get them to say that publicly, I don't think. The Oil Kings are likely right now. Kootenay would probably be the other possibility, and Kootenay was just here in Brandon, and they split the two games in a doubleheader weekend on a Friday-Saturday last weekend. So, Edmonton would be an interesting challenge because it'd be the third time in 4 years the two teams will have met in the playoffs. Of course, they are the defending league champions and Memorial Cup champions, so that persona would still be there, even though they would be basically the seed in the playoffs this year. And there'd be, I think an interesting challenge for Brandon in the fact that, I consider the Oil Kings to have an elite goaltender in Tristan Jarry and a pretty good defense core, and that would be an interesting matchup for the Wheat Kings, who have probably the highest-powered offensive team, especially forwards, in the WHL. So it would be certainly an interesting matchup if that were to be the case. And Kootenay's almost the exact opposite of Edmonton, where they have what I think is a pretty good group of forwards, maybe not as strong a D, and maybe just average goaltending. So either way, it'll be a good challenge for Brandon. That first-round series, I think, might be a little bit more difficult than you would expect, normally as the number one seed, because the way the playoffs work, much like the NHL playoffs, where you have the top three teams in each division and two wildcard teams, and both Kootenay and Edmonton are in that central division and have better records than the third-place team in the East right now. So could be an interesting playoff series. Whoever it is, looks like it might be Edmonton right now, but we'll wait and see on that.
You mentioned the Wheat Kings and their dynamite offensive team. They're being led by Tim McCauley, a 19-year-old center. He's got 92 points in 64 games for the Wheat Kings, and he went undrafted last year in the NHL draft. What's been the biggest reason for his breakout season, and do you expect that he's going to get his name called in South Florida come the end of June?
Well, I'll answer the latter first. I certainly think there would be worse players for NHL teams to take a chance on right around the sixth or seventh round if that's where he gets to. He's, you know, I think a guy that, number one, being his third year in the league, experience has clearly played a big factor in what he's been able to do this year. And when you get into that age group now, when you're 19 in the Western Hockey League, you should be a little bit faster, a little bit stronger, a little bit quicker than a lot of the players that you're competing against. He's not overly big. He's about 6 feet and 185 pounds, but does everything well and is really, I think, you know, maybe underrated as far as the defensive side of his game is concerned as well. He's one of those guys, as they describe him, as a 200-foot player. He's certainly one of those, and he's taken his offensive part of his game to a different level this year, to be, you know, second in the league basically in scoring right now against some more highly touted prospects, and certainly some NHL prospects, is saying a lot about the way his game has developed this year.
Bruce, you mentioned earlier that the Wheat Kings are a young team this year, and one of their younger players is Nolan Patrick, and we should mention that James Patrick is his uncle and Steve Patrick is his dad. Both guys played in the NHL, but Nolan Patrick actually isn't draft eligible until 2017, I believe?
That's correct, yeah.
And he's got 26 goals this year. How good do you think Nolan Patrick can be?
Well, you see, he's missed the last seven games because of an injury. Well, not play tonight either, so that'll be eight in a row. But just as a comparable, it was interesting. We did the, you know, when he kind of took off as far as his goal scoring is concerned, we did the comparable. And Brett Connolly and Patrick Marleau were the only other two 16-year-olds to reach 30 goals in a season in like the last 20 years or something like that. And both of those guys went on to be top six picks in the NHL draft. I think with Nolan's size and ability that he's shown already, I think there's a lot of guys that have watched him as a first-year 16-year-old in the league this year that have him pegged at the top of the draft in 2017. And he is a guy that I think if things go well in his development, I mean, a comparable to me probably would be a guy like a Ryan Getzlaf or somebody like that that's going to end up being a big-bodied center with the ability to play at both ends of the rink. He is, without a doubt, for me, got to be in consideration to be a high pick in 2017. And I think a lot of people think he might be first overall that year. And I don't know a lot about the 2017 draft class, but I can't imagine there'd be too many other players eligible for that 2017 draft class that would challenge him as far as one of the top picks.
That's pretty incredible, Bruce. A lot of Winnipeg hockey fans are going to be really excited to hear that. And one of the players that was actually acquired in January, Morgan Klimchuk, he was a first-round pick of the Calgary Flames back in 2013. He was acquired from the Regina Pats. How has he fit in since coming over?
I think he's fit in very well. He's played mainly lately, at least with Tim McGauley. And Morgan's another one of those guys I think has a very good understanding of the game at both ends of the rink. And again, another quality 200-foot player. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's got about 33 or 34 points, 14 goals since coming over to Brandon in about 22 or 23 games. So his offensive production has certainly been there, but I think the most impressive part now getting a chance to see Morgan on a night in and night out basis is just how well he is defensively, how he understands the game as far as back checking is concerned, getting the puck out of his own end, covering his man, all those kind of things, those intangibles, if you want to call them, make me think he's going to be a quality player at the next level. And that for him is probably at least going to be in the American Hockey League next year and possibly maybe an opportunity, depending on what Calgary does moving forward, to be in their lineup at some point next season.
Bruce, we'll let you go on this last question, and it's not so much about the Wheat Kings as it is about your legacy in Manitoba hockey circles. And that came on January 25th when you were inducted into the Manitoba Media Roll of Honor by the Sports Writers and Sportscasters Association of this province. You know, take us back to that night, and you know, what did that induction mean to you?
Well, I would never think that I had a legacy. I made the comment before in sense that I always think that an honor like that sometimes should be, you think about guys that are near the end of their careers and not smack dab in the middle. But I think it's always special when you get recognized for what you do. I think it's even more special when you get recognized by people that are your peers, which is the case with the Manitoba Sports Writers and Sportscasters Association. I think the one thing that I enjoyed, this is my 22nd season for doing the Wheat Kings play-by-play on CKLQ. The one thing that I've enjoyed the most is when you get an opportunity to, you know, in some small way, I think for a lot of the guys that have been players for the Wheat Kings, that you maybe have some small part in their development, not only as players, but as people as well. And sometimes when I see, you know, a Matt Calvert or Braden Shin or some of those guys that have gone through the Wheat Kings over the years and you see them being interviewed, you think maybe at some point you kind of help them develop their persona a little bit and how they deal with the media. And I'd like to think all those former Wheat Kings have relationships with the media. I think they do. And that's, I hope this is part of my legacy that I've helped help them to develop.
Too bad you couldn't have spent more time with Phil Kessel than you would have been talking.
College guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Bruce, appreciate your time. Congratulations again. We were there on the 25th. It was a great night. And good luck to the Wheat Kings in the playoff, Chase. And actually, I'm sure we'll speak to you as the Western Hockey League playoffs unfold.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
And if anybody wants to be an umpire, go check out Bruce is at the mall in Brandon. And you know, you can sign up and be an umpire for this summer.
That sounds good.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Minutes past 2 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Bruce Lubke, the voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview with Bruce or any of the previous interviews on the show with Willie Donick, the voice of the Nashville Predators, or Ken Campbell from the Hockey News, they'll be available for download on iTunes and on IllegalCurve.com. Might as well subscribe to the show on iTunes. Get it sent to your iPod automatically. Much easier that way. No thinking, none of that unnecessary effort. You know, and if there's anything that I hate, it's unnecessary effort. This segment of the program is brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com. You got a great, beautiful new location there, so be sure to driving around, obviously. You're listening to us. Check them out there. It's a great place to check in. Phil Kessel made some waves earlier in the week. I mean... Ezzy, and we'll talk about it, but can the Leaf season just end? Can they just forfeit the last, you know, 16, 18 games, whatever they have left, and just end this season? It's been just interminable in Toronto this year. They have 17 games left.
I'm sure the
Would
Leafs,
anybody be upset if they just forfeited and
well,
went home?
You know, it's actually not that funny because you watch the Leafs play, and they don't have a lot of life to them, and the players are not really, I don't think, enjoying playing these games or maybe even coming to the rink, but Phil Kessel, obviously, specifically, has had a really rough year. The entire team has. The city, the hockey fans, I think, are fed up of this losing. They were in a playoff spot and in the first round of the playoffs a couple of years ago, and this year is obviously the second year in a row that they're going to miss the playoffs. But it just hasn't been a fun year. The trade deadline wasn't fun for Leafs players or their fans. And I agree with you, Drew. They're just waiting for the season to end.
Let's hear what Mr. Kessel had to say in case you happen to have missed it from earlier in the week.
You know what? I'm disappointed today. I think the way the media treats Dion Phaneuf in this city is embarrassing. I think a lot of people should be ashamed of themselves. I'm embarrassed for them, you know. I don't think anyone deserves to be treated like that, and I think a lot of media here should be embarrassed what they've said to him, just in general. It's embarrassing.
Is there one thing that...
No, just in general. I think you guys unfair criticize Deanne. I mean, he's our best defenseman, and you guys act like he's, you know, not trying out there and this and that. I mean... It's embarrassing, you know, and I'm embarrassed for some people and things they said about him.
Dion Phaneuf might be their best defenseman. I mean, I think Morgan Rielly is long-term going to be their best defenseman. He's certainly going to be better than Dion Phaneuf is, based on everything. You know, I don't know what Phil Kessel's really talking about here, I got to be honest. I don't think that anybody's, you know, he might be confusing the media and the general public, because the general public may not be fair to Dion Phaneuf, but, you know, by nature of Toronto being the center of the universe, you can't help but see, you know, what's happening there. I haven't really been able to pinpoint any specific incidences where anyone's been unfair to Dion Phaneuf. Critical, yes, but those criticisms have all been valid and they've been rooted in on-ice play. Nobody's, you know, unfairly criticizing him for anything, you know, besides the performance they're seeing on the ice.
Well, it's pretty clear what he's saying, Drew. It's whether or not you agree with what he's saying. He's saying that the media is treating Phaneuf unfairly, and Phaneuf hasn't had a very good year, and he's had some injury problems, but Phil Kessel hasn't had a good year either. And to me, he's taking it out on the media, I think, when he says that the media haven't treated Dion Phaneuf fairly. I think what he's saying is the media hasn't treated Phil Kessel fairly either. And when you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, since Randy Carlyle was fired, they have just been awful. Mm-hmm. When Randy Carlyle was fired, they were in a playoff spot. People seem to forget that.
Sure.
And
no, it was more of an illusion than them being a very good hockey team.
It doesn't matter.
But they were way more competitive.
It doesn't matter, Drew, if it was an illusion or not. The point is they weren't one of the worst teams in the NHL. Now, since then, because they've lost so many games, they've become one of the worst teams in the NHL. But really, I think what you have here with Phil Kessel, and Phil Kessel has said repeatedly when he does speak, because we know that sometimes he doesn't like to speak, he said repeatedly he doesn't read the newspapers and he doesn't watch a lot of TV and radio, yet we know that when you're in the media market of Toronto, you're sometimes going to hear some of this stuff. And we saw him earlier in the season blow up with Dave Festchuk. Mm-hmm. After Randy Carlyle was fired, he kind of said, well, am I the reason why everybody remembers that famous quote?
Sure,
we played that on the show, and many radio shows played that. But I think Phil Kessel, I think we've seen him, and we've seen his body language both on and off the ice. And, you know, we asked Ken Campbell about it last hour. Phil Kessel has signed a large contract to stay with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and there are only a handful of teams that can really take that contract when you consider how much money it is per year and how many years are left. It's 6 years after this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of money. Toronto is not buying out that contract. They've already bought out too many I think they're still paying the Mike Komisarek contract. So when you talk about Phil Kessel, that's a guy that's frustrated.
Aren't they still paying Darcy Tucker?
Yeah. And I mean, Drew, I hear those comments and I like it, because I like to see a guy really share his emotions. I don't agree with him.
Yeah.
I don't think listen, I think there have been some good articles written about it. Cathal Kelly in the Globe and Mail wrote about this, kind of, you know, back in the day when he covered the Toronto Blue Jays, and Frank Thomas was really not polite with the reporters, and the reporters are kind of, it's their own fraternity, and they kind of turned on Frank Thomas because it's reciprocal, right?
Sure.
If you're not going to be polite to the reporters, they're not going to be polite to you. But as far as Phil Kessel goes, I think it's very clear. It's abundantly clear that Phil Kessel does not enjoy talking to the media, and we could sit here all day and argue about if that's his job. And of course, it is his job. But I think it's been so bad in Toronto this year, maybe worse than any other year in recent memory, Drew, mm-hmm. that Phil Kessel has just had enough, and now he's just starting to speak his mind.
But yeah, but he's one of the key problems with why, I mean, he's the player. You know, if you don't want it to be so bad, and you don't want to be talked, you know, you don't want to be in the glare of the spotlight of what's happening with a bad hockey team, play better. I mean, Phil Kessel, it's not like he's lighting it up and everyone else around him is struggling. He's been as invisible as any other player on that Leafs roster since they've started to struggle.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, pot kettle black, and I mean, look, there's things said. You know, I in social media, I don't understand why any professional athlete would ever be on social media.
No, they shouldn't be on social media.
I don't
media.
Understand what the advantage is, aside from, you know, keyboard bravery and keyboard, you know, brave guys from behind a keyboard saying things to people, why you would want to subject yourself to that. Just stay off social media. It's not very difficult. Our very own Richard Pollock sees no need for social media. Dennis Bayak.
He uses Snapchat, though.
Fine, he uses Snapchat. But that's because his friends are the only ones who are going to be Snapchatting him. Dennis Bayak stays off social media because there's no advantage for being on social media. And I understand that. And, I mean, you see it all the time. So stay off social media. You don't get, you know, inundated with negativity constantly because people aren't nice for whatever reason. They think it's their duty to be jerks on social media. some of them. Stay off that, and you won't have any, you know, your criticisms that are being leveled at you. I don't think anybody's unfairly criticizing you in public in the media. It just doesn't. I don't see it happening, despite what Phil Kessel may say.
I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that in Toronto, Dion Phaneuf is your captain, and you mentioned that he might not be the defenseman of the future. That might be Morgan Rielly, but Dave Nonis, under Dave Nonis's watch, they have signed Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel to long-term contracts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's abundantly clear again that that isn't good enough to be the core of your team. So you throw in Joffrey Lupul, you throw in Tyler Bozak, you throw in James Van Riemsdyk. That's just not enough. And Morgan Rielly and Jake Gardner, some of the future pieces of the team, Drew. And I know William Nylander, he's a few years away. But it's clear that just when going back to just Phil Kessel, it's clear that he has trouble being the guy. Mm-hmm. He has trouble being the star forward that everybody looks to, either as a leader, as someone who carries the offense. It's clear that Phil Kessel needs a number one center.
Yeah.
And no offense to Tyler Bozak, but he needs someone who has more skill than Tyler Bozak. He needs someone there, Drew, to take the heat off of him.
Sure.
All the heat has been on Phil Kessel, and to a varying degree, Dion Phaneuf. And it's clear that he can't handle it. And you read, various articles Ken Campbell wrote about Phil Kessel, and, you know, they talked to some of his coaches in college hockey. He played for University of Minnesota, and he's not an alpha male.
Yeah.
And he's not someone who emerges as a leader, and he hasn't been a leader on most of the teams he's played for. And again, I think you need to bring, if they do decide, Drew, to keep Phil Kessel in Toronto, you got to bring someone else in. And I know JVR, Van Riemsdyk is a good player too, but you need to bring in someone else there.
Just to insulate him.
He needs to be insulated.
He can't be the face of the franchise.
No.
And I don't criticize him for not being able to be the face of the franchise. People are wired differently. I just didn't really understand where the roots of this rant were coming from.
I agree with you. I don't think Phaneuf has been unfairly criticized, but I think what it is for Phil Kessel is that he hears Dion Phaneuf is going to be traded, and we're told by various sources that he almost was traded.
Sure,
I think he's taking the really his frustration out on the media.
I want to be traded. Why does Phil get to be traded? Or why does Dion get to be traded? I want to be traded too. Anyways, never a dull moment in Leafs land as you'd expect. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL. Boston signed a couple of pieces to contract extensions. We'll tell you about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Great game being played between Boston and Philly this afternoon in Boston. Philly up one with less than 20 seconds to go. Shorthanded, the Bruins just tied it up. So it looks like they're going to be heading to overtime. Brad Marchand with his 20th goal of the season for the Bruins. And then, because I'm the host and I get host prerogative, I can also update you that the University of Kentucky up 6 on Florida in their quest to go undefeated in the regular season. 31-0 if they win today against Florida Gators. It's the beauty of being the host. You get to tell people things that they may or may not have had any interest in knowing whatsoever. Anyways, let's talk about the Boston Bruins, in that they signed two players to contract extensions earlier in the week. The first one, of course, is Rielly Smith. He signs a two-year deal with the Bruins. It's a two-year contract extension for Rielly Smith. He's going to be paid $3.425 million for the next two seasons, 2015-16, 16-17. So we'll still be a restricted free agent at the end of that contract. And then on the back end, Torrey Krug signs a one-year contract extension worth $3.4 million and will remain an RFA at the end of that deal as well. Both those guys, they certainly didn't hold out, but they were without contracts until late, very close to training camp earlier this year, as they were RFAs without salary arbitration. So that's the Bruins take care of those both of those players for the next couple seasons.
Right, and you mentioned that they signed a little bit late. Both signed one-year contracts, which I think is important here, which is...
Smith signed a one-year contract in the summer. He's just signed a two-year extension.
Right. And then Krug, but they signed the one-year contracts before this season started.
That's right, in August.
Right, and we talked about that at the beginning of the season. It was pretty interesting because Boston was having salary cap issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why they traded Johnny Boychuk to the Islanders at the beginning of the season. And, you know, they're still a cap team. They're always going to be a cap team in Boston. You know, Riley Smith has been on the first line with Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron there. He was on the ice for the goal that was just scored against Philadelphia. He's a player that was kind of almost considered a throw-in to the Louis Erickson trade that saw Tyler Seguin. Should probably call it the Tyler Seguin trade.
Yeah, that would be more fitting, I would suggest.
But he was thrown in there, and he's actually turned out and arguably to be more valuable than Louis Erickson on the right wing for the Boston Bruins. And, you know, we've talked about the Boston Bruins quite a bit because they're one of those teams that, you know, obviously they're fighting tooth and nail to get into the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
when you'd think that they probably would have been a top seed in the Eastern Conference. But they're one of those teams that just seem to be not the Boston Bruins of years past, especially the team that won the Stanley Cup back in 2011. But, you know, back to Riley Smith and Torrey Krug, these are key parts of the team going forward. I think that's fairly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And when you throw in David Pastrnak, another right winger who's playing on the second line now, drafted just in 2014. We were there when he was drafted. And you throw in some other youngsters. Dougie Hamilton's still young. You throw in Ryan Spooner. I mean, these guys are key parts of the team. Now, I guess the question is, well, what are their next contracts going to be? Because I think for these players on the Boston Bruins, they know that they signed these contracts because of some of the other contracts that are going to have to be signed by Peter Chiarelli, some of the more veteran players. So I saw these contracts, and they make complete sense. To me, I was thinking, well, okay, well, what's the next contract going to be? Because you'd think, especially with Torrey Krug, defensemen like this, and I know Torrey Krug, you know, he's had his share of struggles here in his second full NHL season, but defensemen like that, Drew, who can move the puck like that and can especially adapt to the NHL game at this young age, I think are tough to really just pluck off of trees. So with Zdeno Chara, you know, at the late stages of his career, I think signing Torrey Krug and then now Dougie Hamilton, who's had an excellent season, in my opinion,
yeah.
I think makes complete sense. And that's what I'll be curious to see, what these next contracts are for these players.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing I like about these deals is the Bruins are going to be up against the salary cap, and they always are because they've got the number of, you know, long contracts on the books, and they had salary cap troubles entering this season, which you mentioned with the Johnny Boychuk trade. At least you get these deals done, so you have some cost certainty entering July 1st with,
yes,
free agency. You know if you can be a player or if you cannot be a player because these contracts are done. You don't have to worry about, you know, adding somebody on July 1st or July 2nd when free agency opens without having Smith and Krug done. They're still, you know, you don't have to worry if they're still RFAs. It'd be interesting. Dougie Hamilton's also an RFA after,
right,
this year. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, when that deal gets done. They got a couple other RFAs in Ryan Spooner and Brett Connolly, who they just acquired from Tampa. But those certainly will not be as, probably anywhere as, not that these contracts are going to be necessarily contentious, but the Dougie Hamilton one will be interesting given, you know, he's been playing pretty well in pretty big minutes for the Boston Bruins. What's he going to command as an RFA? Again, an RFA with no arbitration eligibility or anything along those lines.
Right, and I believe Carl Soderberg is an RFA coming up.
He's a UFA at the end
UFA.
Of the season.
So, yeah. I mean, Peter Chiarelli's got to sign quite a few players here. And, you know, we were talking about, really, we've talked to several people, Jack Edwards among them, voice of the Boston Bruins. They're really missing that role that Nathan Horton and Jerome Iginla filled,
yeah,
there. And
the winger, we've talked,
yeah,
about it on this show
a big scoring
ton
winger
of times. Sure.
Yeah, and Milan Lucic has started to put the puck in the net a little bit more there on the second line. But David Krejci, we've talked about this too, he's got to be healthy. If this team wants to be serious playoff cup contenders, they've got to have Krejci there on the second line behind Patrice Bergeron, because you've got Ryan Spooner there playing really in a role that for the first time in his career. So I think the Boston Bruins, you know, we talked about this a little bit, they're going to be kind of similar to the Chicago Blackhawks back in 2010, I think. Not that they're going to win the Stanley Cup this year, but it's going to be tough for them to keep all of their players. Because,
mm-hmm,
you mentioned Dougie Hamilton's an RFA. You'd have to think, if you're Dougie Hamilton and his agent, you got to think they want, if they don't want a bridge deal, they want to get locked up for 5 or 6 years. Again, they might sign the bridge deal, so it might make it a little bit easier. But then when you talk about Carl Soderberg, he's going to want quite a bit of money,
sure,
because he's a good offensive player. He's struggled as of late, but still, he's been a good player since he's come over from Europe. So Boston Bruins, Peter Chiarelli, he's going to be busy this offseason.
Yeah, they absolutely will be. And Dougie Hamilton's the one I'm going to keep an eye on because, I mean, they still have Zdeno Chara for another three seasons on the books. And, I mean, he's entering the downside of his career, yeah, obviously. And, I mean, it's questionable if he even if he signs another contract after this one expires. Might be.
I think this is his last one.
I would think this would be his last contract, especially with another 3 years still to go on it. But it's
tougher for defensemen, especially defensemen that play that role. I mean, you saw Nicholas Lidstrom hang on towards the end of his career as a defenseman, and Chris Chelios. There's some guys that can play into their mid-40s, but after this contract is over, Drew Char is going to be how old, 39 or 40?
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's no reason at that point, especially if he's not playing at that Norris caliber, there's no reason to keep playing. But, again, he is a guy that we've heard time and time again is one of those players that's in really good shape. So
yeah, and I mean, when you're Zdeno Chara, you know, people can try and hit you, but they don't really. Oh, Boston just won in overtime. But anyways, that's a bad loss for the Philadelphia
Marchand
Flyers.
Again.
Marchand, that's good for me in our hockey pool, as I have Marchand. That's bad for the Philadelphia Flyers. This is just the Drew Mandel show at this point in time. It's bad for the Flyers. They thought they had a victory there that would have really put them 2 points behind the Bruins.
They got a point.
They got a point, but they're now 5 points behind the Bruins rather than being 2 points behind the Bruins. Had they held on to that lead with 20 seconds to go in the Eastern Conference, you know, Boston, I still expect Boston's going to be the second wild card team in the East. You look at it, and I don't expect Florida's, I mean, especially with Boston having two games in hand on Florida. And,
well, especially with the uncertain health of Roberto Luongo.
Exactly. Well, I'm pretty sure you're playing goal for them tonight, like
well,
I said.
I mean, Dan Ellis was called up from the AHL, but they had Rob Tallis as an option. I mean, I agree with you, Drew. I mean, Boston right now is in the driver's seat, and they should get that last wild card spot.
Mm-hmm. Montreal,
but
Boston,
some teams like Ottawa are still kicking around.
I don't know. I still don't. I have trouble believing that this run by Ottawa, well, it has been tremendously impressive. I have trouble believing that this run is going to materialize into anything other than them having a worse draft spot than they would have if they didn't go on this run.
Crazier things have happened. We have a radio show.
Yeah, well, that's a fair point you make there, Ezzy. That's a reasonable point there. I just look at it, and Boston just seems like they're, you know, they haven't been playing great hockey by any stretch, but they just continue to, you know, I just don't see them collapsing to the point that they would need to collapse with having, you know, two games in hand on the Panthers, and, you know, tied in games with Ottawa and getting, you know, having all those teams pass them for that final playoff spot.
And at this time of year, when you're talking about who's left, the Boston Bruins, the Florida Panthers, the Ottawa Senators, the advantage always goes to the team that has more experience, and that's Boston.
Sure.
And you've had a team here that, even though that they haven't gotten back to their Stanley Cup form of 4 years ago, you've got a Vezina Trophy winner in Tuukka Rask. You've got a Norris Trophy winner in Zdeno Chara. Patrice Bergeron is a two-time Selke Award winner. When you have David Krejci coming back from injury, that's just going to make you better up the middle. So,
well, here, it's like we were talking about earlier in the show with Ken Campbell, I believe. You know, the Nashville Predators, if they end up, you know, being first in the Central Division as they currently are, their reward for playing so well all year might be to face the Los Angeles Kings in the first round or something along those lines. Same with, you know, the Montreal Canadiens. Congratulations, you've been one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference all year long. Your reward is to play your chief rivals in what'll be a seven-game war, is what'll be between the Bruins and the Canadiens. That's how they currently would play out in the Eastern Conference. It's not much of a reward at all.
No, and once the playoffs start, it takes on a life of its own. We've seen that. Doesn't matter if you're on a winning streak before the playoffs started.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about matchups, and Boston, Montreal, there are a lot of fans in those two cities that are hoping that that's a first-round matchup.
A lot of hockey fans who are hoping that's a first-round matchup. I mean, we've talked about it for the last couple weeks. You look at the first-round matchups, and they're just going to be there's potential for them just to be absolutely terrific. New York, Pittsburgh in the first round. The Islanders, Washington. I mean, so much history in between a lot of those teams, especially in the Eastern Conference. I just described it earlier in the show as a dog's breakfast, and that's not a derogatory way of describing it. It's a function of
dog food these days is very good. It's come a long way.
I'm not even touching that one. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
One final segment on this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. Of course, following us, Hustler and Lawless, they're live on the road with the Winnipeg Jets. They'll take you from 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock in Nashville. 5 to 6, Rick Ralph.
They're broadcasting from the Grand Ole Opry, right?
I believe so, actually. And then they're performing there later on. They didn't know. I bet you didn't know that they had that kind of skills.
Yeah, with the Judds?
With the Judds. No, actually, it's funny you mentioned the Judds because, you know, Ashley Judd is at the UK game right now that we're watching in the studio.
She has terrific voices. Pick up one of their records.
Yeah. She's a huge University of Kentucky fan, so she's at all the big games. So that's happening. That's a good tie-in with everything coming full circle here today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Got to give a shout-out to our colleague over on 103.1 Virgin Radio.
Yeah.
Mandy Hsu. Mandy, I hadn't had the pleasure to meet her before this morning, but, you know, as anybody knows, the quickest way to any of our hearts here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is to bring us food. And that's what she did. She brought us some fabulous cupcakes. And so we, you know, I had a strawberry cupcake.
Yep.
I think you had a banana and cinnamon cupcake?
It was banana and chocolate chip.
Oh,
very
banana,
good.
Chocolate
very,
chip.
Very
cupcake.
Nice of Mandy to bring us cupcakes because. Yeah. If you know, she's ever listened to the show, she would know that we're constantly eating on the show, whether it's corned beef sandwiches, pizza, Timbits, whatever. Yeah. So really nice of her. Really good cupcakes.
Yeah, so we've replaced her with Richard. So Richard's off the show, and Mandy's on the show from now on because she brought cupcakes. Remus, do you enjoy your cupcake too there?
Solid cupcake.
Yeah, solid cupcake is right. Anyways, one final segment on this Saturday afternoon here on the show. You know it. You love it. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Erie Otters forward and expected 2015 first overall pick Connor McDavid is currently on a 25-game point streak and has a remarkable 107 points in 40 games despite missing a month with a hand injury. Considering his points per game is 2.68 and Erie has 8 regular season games left, will McDavid finish over or under 130 points for the season?
Well, I remember, Drew, we were talking about this back
in October. 23 points in the last 8 games is
right.
What you're asking.
And we were talking about this back in October, whether or not he could beat Bobby Smith's record that he set the same year that Gretzky had that impressive season. I believe it was 182 points. But Connor McDavid, as you'll remember, injured his hand in the fight that he gone into there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say under. I don't think he'll be able to quite keep up the pace, but I don't think he's going to fall very short of it. He's at 107. I think he'll probably end up somewhere around 122 to 125. It's going to be tough to keep up 2.65 points per game. So he's going to come close, though.
I would think you're probably right because I believe that the Otters are firmly in a playoff spot. And so I imagine that what they'll do is they will sort of, they won't ride him as hard because they'll want him to be at full strength for the upcoming OHL playoffs and, of course, the Memorial Cup playoffs.
That's right.
Memorial Cup, which I'm sure is their hope to end up at that fine tournament to end their season. So I suspect they'll probably take their foot off the gas pedal to some degree. In Colorado, Nathan MacKinnon broke a foot. He's out of action for 6 to 8 weeks. That'll be the end of the season for the Avalanches. They're not going to make the playoffs. If you had to describe Nathan MacKinnon's season in one word, what would that word be?
Disappointing. Mm-hmm. And it's been a disappointing year for the Colorado Avalanche as a whole. Gabriel Landeskog hasn't had the best year. Matt Duchene hasn't had a very good year. Really, I would say the only player that has maybe exceeded expectations is Tyson Barry on defense, and he was injured for a little bit there. But the Colorado Avalanche are a very skilled team, but they got to retool and they got to bring in some defensemen there. We've talked about this a lot, but as far as Nathan MacKinnon goes, the sky's the limit. He had an excellent rookie year last year with 63 points, and he's obviously not going to play for the rest of the regular season, and the Colorado Avalanche are not making the playoffs, but I don't think Nathan MacKinnon should feel bad. It's just he didn't have the year that he expected, and he's got to go back after he's done with his injury. He's got to go back to, you know, enjoying his spring and summer and then get back to training and focusing on next year.
Yeah, but just a bit of a down year altogether, I would say, for the Colorado Avalanche more than anything there. Interesting story, really interesting story out of Philadelphia. They've parted ways with goaltender Jeff Reese. And it's sort of just, obviously this is a strange time of the year to be parting ways with your goaltending coach, given that there's, you know, 16, 17 games to go. And, you know, Steve Mason gave a lot of credit to Jeff Reese about his, you know, his return to form and becoming a, you know, average, above average NHL starter. Sort of just dysfunction in the Flyers based on this story, I would say.
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere, Drew, because Steve Mason actually has had a pretty good year. And the Philadelphia Flyers, even though they're maybe not going to make the playoffs this year. They're not that far out of a playoff spot, as we mentioned, after today's game, 5 points out. Mm-hmm. And Steve Mason and Ray Emery have done a pretty good job there. And they're obviously not the long-term plan. You know, Anthony Stolarz of the London Knights, he's in their system now. I think he's probably who they want to be in goal a couple of years from now, hopefully, if he develops in the AHL. But you hear that Jeff Reese and Craig Berube had differences of opinion.
Well, it's our buddy Frank Saravelli. Wrote the story, and it's available. We can tweet it out. He's saying that what happened is Jeff Reese was upset with the manner in which the Flyers were employing Steve Mason as he was coming back from his injuries. Right. He had a couple different injuries throughout the course of the year, including one of them being arthroscopic knee surgery. And he was dressed as the backup, but the expectation and the understanding that he had is that Mason was only going to play if there was an injury to goaltender Rob Zepp. The Flyers went down 2-0 in that game. I can't remember. I think it was a game against Toronto, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that, about who the opponent was. And head coach Craig Berube went to Mason, even though Mason hadn't really practiced since coming back from that injury and hadn't really been in what you would describe as game shape. And so apparently Jeff Reese went to bat for his goaltenders, you know, saying, you know, this isn't the way you treat people in terms of their preparedness. You can't throw them into the fire of a game when they're not ready to go. And that's apparently what led to the upheaval between the Flyers and their ex-goaltender coach and Jeff Reese.
Right. And so they're parting ways, and that's unfortunate. But obviously Jeff Reese and the coaching staff and the management have had a difference of opinion. Someone like Jeff Reese, I imagine, is going to get other opportunities because, as we just talked about, he's done a really good job with Steve Mason. I remember Jeff Reese used to play for the Hartford Whalers back in the day, but it's unfortunate, but this type of stuff happens in hockey.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason Markusoff of the Calgary Herald reported this week that plans will soon be unveiled for a new arena in Calgary. The Scotiabank Saddle Dome, completed in 1983, is one of the oldest buildings in the NHL. The ambitious project is expected to have many components, including possibly having an amateur sports field house and a new football stadium. What is your favorite memory of the Calgary Saddle Dome?
There's so many good memories of the Saddle Dome. I've been fortunate enough to watch several games there. I haven't been there since 2004, but for me, in 2004, going with Richie and our friend Neil Rockman, watching the second round of the Western Conference playoffs against the Detroit Red Wings, that was a great memory for me. I remember we were wearing our Jets jerseys back in 2004 in the Saddle Dome, and we were interviewed and really making a lot of friends there, especially with ex-Winnipeggers who were living in Calgary. But that run in 2004, Drew, I know they won the Stanley Cup in 1989, but that run that they made in 2004, Daryl Sutter is the coach, and you remember Dave Lowry was on that team, and Mika Kiprasov and Aginla and Mike Commodore, all those great veteran players, Jelena, who's now an assistant coach with the Calgary Flames. To me, that run that they made with the Red Mile there, to me, that was just some of my favorite memories of those games at the Saddle Dome.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw one game at the Saddle Dome. I believe you were there with me.
Yep. It's the Canucks.
No, it was the Avalanche.
Oh.
It was a Saturday night. We were there on a ski trip. There was a whole group of us that took the bus down from Winnipeg, and it was the worst hockey game I think I've ever seen. It was two teams going nowhere. I was excited. The only exciting aspect, I think, was Patrick Waugh was still playing net for the Avs, and they didn't even start on that game. They played their backup.
In the early 2000s, they had some rough teams.
I may or may not have been nursing a tremendous hangover at that point in time, and it was just an awful game, and that was my memory of the Calgary Saddle Dome. Last question for Rapid Fire. On Thursday evening, Ottawa Deputy Mayor Bob Monette presented longtime Senators captain Daniel Alfredson with a key to the city in a ceremony that was attended by teammates and Senators General Manager Brian Murray. If you were given a key to the city for your work with the Legal Curve, what doors would you try to open?
It's a good question.
You wrote the question.
You know, there's a lot of different places that I'd like to open. I mean, I think it would probably be kind of fun to have the key, try to open Remus's apartment when he's not home, and try to just like maybe trash Remus's apartment with the key to the city. But I don't know. What would you do, Drew? Because let's be honest, if anybody's getting the key to the city, it's you.
Yeah, though I would agree with that statement. I'd probably just try and open restaurants on a whim.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I needed some extra food, I would just try and open every restaurant.
Like open up Bernstein's Deli when it's closed and then just steal all of the brisket.
All the brisket, all the corned beef, everything like that. I would probably try and do that.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Mr. Ginsburg.
You know, I was gonna cheer Devin Dubnyk for starting 23 straight games. I think 22 or 23 straight games. But you know what? I gotta cheer a non-hockey player, and it's Alex Delaloy, who has obviously been, you know, the greatest story, I think, off the ice for the Winnipeg Jets. She's, of course, the young girl who was going through cancer treatment, yeah. And held up the sign, and since then she's been invited back by the Jets to watch some games, and she actually got to meet the Jets, and there was actually a boy at the game who, a little slightly older than Alex, and gave her a stick.
Mm-hmm. That was a great thing.
Just, she's become such a really a sign of inspiration and hope, and I think it's great. Every time they show her at the MTS Center, she was at the game against Ottawa. Mm-hmm. Just a great story.
I would echo that very much so. And I'm sort of going to follow up on that. I'm going to cheer Duncan Keith and the Chicago Blackhawks. There's a great video available. We'll tweet it out if you haven't seen it. There's a young girl who was born without the ability. Her name's Cammy. She was born without the ability to walk or speak, and her goal was to shoot a goal with her favorite player. The Blackhawks have a What's Your Goal campaign, and they produce these videos. And with the help of Duncan Keith, Duncan Keith and Cammy were able to slip a puck past the Blackhawks goaltender Antti Raanta, and it's a terrific video and tremendously heartwarming. So you can check that out online if you want to see hockey players at their best, giving back to the community. That's it for this week in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Knott Auto Corp. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the show, subscribe, get a sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Remus and analyst Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel.
You mean Ezra Ginsburg?
I said, you know what? All show long, I was close to saying Richard Pollock. Analyst Ezra Ginsburg.
Richie will be back tomorrow.
Richie will be back on Wednesday. Thanks for listening, and if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.